Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Cinematically Deprived. It's been a minute. Not for the lack of podcasting. I've got the podcasts. I just haven't gotten around to editing them. Life's been a little bit crazy. But this week's is a real gem. We had a very close friend of mine on the podcast. His name's Eric Biella. He's a DP, director of photography, works in the commercial industry heavily, and also owns a production studio up in Deerfield, Highland Park area in Illinois, called Red Door Stage. So if you ever need any stage-related stuff for photography, anything like that, you should totally hit this guy up. I'll have his show note or his social stuff tagged in the information below. He does a lot of live switching as well. But more than anything, this is a guy I love riffing with. We could go on and joke for hours. So this podcast will go here, there, and a little bit of everywhere, but we will cover mainly Cool Hand Luke, which is the film that we're going to be talking about today. And without any further ado, this is Cinematically Deprived's breakdown of Cool Hand Luke with Eric Biella.
You're listening to Cinematically Deprived, a podcast dedicated to the watching and breaking down of films of all genres and walks of life. My name's Jordan Cantola, and I'm a filmmaker, writer, and actor whose claim to fame amongst my friends is that I've somehow made it this far in the production world, having seen so few films. So join us as we fix that, one episode at a time, breaking down the good, the bad, and the ugly of what we just watched, right here on Cinematically Deprived.
Okay, we're back. What's up, Eric? How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty darn good. So we got the intro of who you are and the movie that we're watching. Cool Hand Luke, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. I'm just going to give a brief description of what the movie's about, and then we can get into it.
Go for it.
So Cool Hand Luke came out in 1967, but it takes place in the 50s as we follow Luke Jackson, played by none other than Paul Newman, who I thought, when Eric was like, do you know who he is? I was like, yeah, the pasta sauce dude. as he spends 2 years in a Florida prison farm doing time for a petty crime that he committed. Let's get right into it. What made you choose Cool Hand Luke?
It's a classic. Yeah. It's one that these days it's hard to find something like it. The idea of it, of who Luke is and what he does in the film, it's been used now over and over. You see it in a lot of different movies now, but yeah. This is one of the first ones where, you know, Luke is the kind of the martyr of the group. He's the one doing things to kind of raise everyone's morale.
When was the first time you remember seeing it? Like, was it when you were a kid?
No, I think I was in college. Okay. At the time.
Was it for college or just... No,
they're a group of us that somebody had thrown it out there because once in a while we do a movie night and it was always something a little more current.
Yeah.
And somebody had thrown it out there because I think they had watched it as a kid and hadn't seen it since.
I've never heard of it until you recommended it, and I was like, okay, yeah. And I didn't read anything about it. I kind of like to go into them that way because a lot of these movies that people suggest I watch, I'm like, okay, yeah, I have no idea. And it informs a lot of decisions. So I didn't know if it was like for a film watching class, because after I watched this and I was taking notes on it, I looked up all of the ratings for it. It has like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang, so maybe this is like something they watch in like cinema classes, maybe break down.
If you look into it, there actually are a lot of resources online that show like kids that have written for a college class. So it definitely is. And I don't remember the guy that recommended it may have been in a class that was recommended or something, but yeah. I know he had said he'd seen it when he was a kid. And
okay. So that's interesting that it was like, because like you talk to people nowadays and it's like the current movies that they're like, dude, you should totally watch this. It's like a film that might be in the cinema now or in the theaters now. And it's not very often like you get recommended, which is kind of interesting about this podcast. And it's one of the things that I really like is a lot of the films that people are recommending are from like back in the day that I would never watch by myself now.
It's a great way to start out at least.
Exactly.
I mean, I've got a million film ideas for this thing, and it ranges from something current that you probably haven't seen to, all of this old, but going back to that old stuff, you can see so many similarities in other films now that you can say, okay, I see where they drew their ideas from.
It reminds me, like you were just talking about that with this one, but it reminds me of like when Josh and I broke down Once Upon a Time in the West, and you see all of the techniques and styles that Tarantino took.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, wow, yeah, this is totally. And like watching this, you're like, oh, okay, now I see how like things are being influenced by this, like this film itself and this time period of filmmaking.
I also like this time period because it kind of slows everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes a while to develop the character, the plot line, and nowadays it's like you jump into it and there better be an explosion in the first 2 minutes or you're bored.
Right?
So
it's like, it really is testament to our attention spans and how it's like we're just now needing to be entertained rather than actually like having like a reality that you can leave into and be like, for the next hour and a half to 2 hours, I'm watching this person live their life.
Right.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. We talked about, as soon as it was done, it was interesting because I had a lot of feelings, but I didn't understand what was going on. And we talked about how it was like, it was a real slow build and stuff. And I was like, yeah, but it felt like there was so much more to it than that. So originally I was like, I found this as a very unique film because, like you were just saying, for the time period in which this came out, it seems like cinema was more so like allowing you to experience what's happening. So it wasn't like forcing stuff down your face of like explosion, cool fight, anything like that. You, like, this film is based around like a setting and a time period, a lot like Once Upon a Time in the West, where it's conveying this hot environment, everything's sticky, you're under the grind of the man, and you're just like really slaving away, and it prolongs that over like an hour and a half of just like beating it into you that this is a harsh reality.
Yeah. Well, I think you said the next day that I mean, it was probably like 90 degrees here, and you're just like, oh, it's hot, but it doesn't quite feel so bad now.
Right?
I'm not going through what Luke went through.
Dude, I don't have air conditioning, and it's so funny you say that because the next day, it had to have been close to 98 degrees in my apartment. I'm like, oh, it's fucking hot. And I'm like, stop being a pussy, Jordan. Yeah, you're not swinging a sickle on the side of a road, taking out weeds and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, it makes you like think about like this time period, though, of this, like the six, this was shot in the 60s.
Late 60s, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I looked up, though, and it takes place in the 50s.
50s,
yeah. Which is, we'll get into that, but it's very significant that that's the time period it takes place in. But it's like, now I can't remember where I was going with that, but like, it really draws testament to, oh, how cruel the conditions were in terms of like what we considered reform.
Yeah.
Like this manual labor of like, basically you did something bad, we're going to break you into submission so you learn what you're supposed to do in society.
Yeah. And they break everyone.
They break fucking everyone. That's the cool thing. Okay. So that actually leads into this next part. Before what I end up wanting to do in a minute here is we're going to watch the first scene and we're going to break down the different things we see in it as it goes. But I want to give a little bit of a brief synopsis of like what I saw the big message in this film was, and then we can branch out throughout the podcast. But I started to realize like this entire film is about the disconnect in the youth and between the youth and the government, or even the older generations of the 60s. Because it's like, and it's all through like the rebellious acts of Luke. Mm-hmm. Like, he is the poster child. He's the protagonist of this film, but he's the protagonist by being an antagonist to the government's authority.
Yeah.
And like this prison system. Like, we open up, which we're about to see here, and he's just breaking the law for the fucking, like, just for the sake of it.
Because he's bored.
Because he's fucking bored.
Yeah.
He's just like, well, I don't know, I guess I did it. Yeah. I don't really have a reason. And so it's that rebellious nature. It's like, he's basically giving a giant middle finger to the man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great to see that play out because I've never seen Paul Newman like this young, but he is like the poster child for like just cool, slick, don't give a fuck, I'm doing my own thing, and you're just going to have to put up with it.
Yep.
God, this is so good. And then, so that's what, like earlier when I was talking about, like, there's a reason it took place in the 50s. This time period was such a crucial time period in America at the time. When I ended up looking it up, I was like, what type of stuff happened in the 50s that like that's why this was taking place then. And I looked it up, and America was like swimming in societal turmoil at the time. The U.S. was like super tense with civil rights issues and struggling through civil rights, the civil rights movement. And this is like right after the Vietnam War, if I'm correct. So there was like a huge growing like cultural dissonance between like the older generations in America and the government saying like, you need to fight this war. Mm-hmm. You need to be patriots. You need to do this. And then you have Luke just coming back from the war, earning all these purple hearts, and he's giving a giant middle finger to the U.S. government saying, like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Like, zero fucks.
Yeah.
It was so cool. As we go through this, you'll just kind of, like, I guess, like, people watching this at home, if you watch this afterwards, look at all the little intricacies. We'll talk about them, but all the little intricacies of basically showing the rebellious youth, which is Luke, sticking up for really himself. And then you have like the captain, the fucking captain, that's just like, you're going to learn today. We got a failure to communicate. Which I want to get your idea of, like, because that was like so perfectly cast in For a Reason, like what it could have meant.
Oh, yeah.
So I could keep going into like breaking this down and stuff like that, but let's just watch the first scene.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so what we're opening with right now is you'll hear on the beat of every one of these like musical beats, a violation sign is coming up on a close-up of a parking meter.
Surprised you knew that's a parking meter.
I know, right?
So young.
I didn't until when we were watching it. I was like, what is going on? And then all, because it's intercutting with like these extreme close-ups. Yeah. So it's kind of like telling the viewer like, sneak peek, violation, sneak peek, violation. So each one is like basically the government saying like, you're doing the wrong thing. You're doing the wrong thing.
And he's taking the heads off. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if that was all just for stage. Because when you cut off a parking meter, I don't think a violation sign would pop up.
No, I think what I'm looking at is like maybe it's just the timing of like when the time ran out of the thing. I think they're, I mean, it's a symbolic reference. Yeah, it's a symbolic reference. It has nothing to do with like you cut the head off and a violation thing pops up.
Exactly.
It's like, violation? I'm taking
like,
that
in
off.
The
50s, I don't care.
I don't think they had wiring in there to be like, the fuck you doing, bro?
He didn't use his app to refresh it.
He didn't use his parking app. So it's real cool though, because like on the beats of the music, you start out with this eerie music, like something's bad's happening. And that opens up in the Warner Brothers logo. And then you open up on, bing, violation. You're like, something's happening here that's not right. And then you see...
You hear the...
Yes, that sound, which is also a lot like Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah.
It relies so heavily on sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
shot in the same time period, too. So, I mean, the filmmaking techniques are going to be very similar, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I didn't even think about that. Totally. And you hear that grinding, and the grinding leads into just like... It's like a consistent in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pop out and you see the hands doing it and you're like, somebody's doing this. And then you see the feet walking around. And then all of a sudden, let's see where it goes from there.
Yeah.
And you see the parking meter fall off and you realize what's happening.
And he just steps away from it.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he's doing it to try and take money out of it. He just picks it up, puts it next to the post, on to the next one.
It is. It is a fuck you. And then I love this. This is the first reveal of the character. All of a sudden it pulls up and it just goes Paul Newman right next to him. And check out this smile, this goofy
smirk.
Look what I did.
Yeah. I'll go to the next one.
Just it's a casual Friday night, just drinking a beer. Yeah.
What else are you gonna do?
Yep. And this is the best part. He gets it, kisses the next meter, and then goes right on to the next.
Did he kiss it or was he just like looking at the violation sign?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, he did kiss it. I never even saw that before.
Yeah,
I just thought he was looking at the violation sign. I was like, yep, that one is too. I'm taking it out.
It's like, I don't even know. I mean, I think it's just like another fuck you. Like,
yeah,
here you go, buddy.
Yep.
I'm being the outstanding citizen you want me to be.
Goodbye. Taking your head off.
Now, I like this next shot because it takes, normally you would square up to this.
Yeah.
But it actually, what is this called when you take a shot and you kind of like.
A Dutch angle.
Yes, there we go. So it takes like a Dutch angle, which kind of conveys like the sense of like something is awry here. Yeah, and you're
it's seeing a little askew. Something's just a bit off kilter.
Yeah. And you see all the meters that he plans on going down.
Yeah. In no rush.
No.
He knows someone's gonna come see him in a little bit. He doesn't care.
Yeah, he just is like, whatever.
Let's have a drink.
Yeah, he's so wasted. He's just like, dude, I love how his necklace is.
He's got the bottle opener.
What a different time. He's able to wear that in prison too.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You're like, whatever.
The lights come up, and he's just like,
"What are you doing there, fella?"
I'm just cut to a neat thing.
You better come along with us.
Love that laugh.
And then it just... And then, so you introduce Paul Newman, and then you get... This is the second, like, profile shot of him.
Yeah.
And he's just got the goofiest fucking laugh on his face. Just like, yeah, I'm coming with you. And then it just says, "Cool Hand Luke." Yeah. Like, an introduction to, like... This is our character. Oh, man. It's, oh, yeah, I put in here, like, half the time, Cool Hand Luke is just, like, rebelling for the sake of rebelling. Half the time, he doesn't even know why. I think he talks about it when he's talking to his mom in the middle. He's just like, she's just like, you know, I don't know, sometimes I just I can't feel like I can find the right.
Well, even when he gets introduced to the warden, you know, the warden goes through his, you know, sheet of, you know, decorated war hero and all this stuff. And he's like, "What are you in here for?" He's like, "Cutting the heads off parking meters."
Right?
Well, why would you do that? He's like, you know, what else am I going to do? You know, he just kind of had that like, eh. You know.
Which I didn't even think about this, but it really does give testament to coming back to after seeing something so horrible like the war. Like, he must... I mean, this character and like people of this time, war veterans of this time, had to have come back and just after seeing horrors like that, being like, what did I fight for?
Mm-hmm.
I saw all of these just horrific incidences, and now I'm just back here like suffering with PTSD.
Well, especially right after Vietnam War, because that's the one where it was like, you know, you came back and you're called a baby killer. Like, you're
I didn't think about
people
that.
Didn't support that war nearly as much as like World War II.
Wasn't there like a lot of, I don't know a lot about the war, so I don't want to speak for it, but wasn't there like a lot of pushback in terms of like a lot of society was like, we don't even want to be here.
Yeah.
And so it does like really raise like this significant like shift in power in terms of like the government is telling you need to do this, and then like the human being like, that's not right.
It's not, yeah.
And just because I live here, now I have to go about this?
Right.
Was there a draft for the Vietnam War?
Yeah.
There wasn't?
I'm almost certain there was.
There was, yeah.
Yeah, there was, because I got an uncle that was, going to be drafted, but ended up just signing up for what he wanted instead of being drafted right into the front lines or something like that.
That goes right back into this, though. It's like he's part of a younger generation and culture that that it's like the government tells you need to do this, you have to do this, and if you're drafted and you don't show up, like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
But if you do go, your life is also fucked. So it's like you have this huge power dynamic that's just, it's so much in terms of like, what do you do with that as a younger generation, where it's like your moral values and when you're supposed to be coming to understanding who you are doesn't align with the direction you're being forced to go down.
Yeah. When you look at, other movies that have talked about that kind of thing, especially with Vietnam War and people coming back and not having the like capacity to come back to regular life.
Yeah.
Like Forrest Gump.
Oh,
He, not Forrest, but, you know, like Lieutenant Dan, he's like completely messed up.
Totally.
I want to say like Born on the 4th of July is another one that's got Tom Cruise in it. Like, he's...
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
I don't remember exactly, but it's been so long. But it, like, all of those things you talk about, you know, you're coming back into this world that, you don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
Like, your world is full of just war.
Yeah.
And you have to come back and try and be normal. It's, that would be just a complete, you know, mess of your head.
So this is what I was talking about the podcast has little structure and it could go anywhere. Because I want to keep talking about this because I think it really informs Luke's character and how precisely it was written. Because you don't have a lot of direction for why Luke does what he does. It's just little hints like that.
Yeah.
But I was talking to a friend just last night via FaceTime because of the pandemic. But we were talking about exactly this, about how our past experiences, whether we like it or not, subconsciously create this like reality of who we are. And at such a young age, if you're forced to go into the war and fight to survive for a cause you don't believe in, when you get back, it makes sense that he would just be doing stuff like this because it's like, fuck it, why not?
What's the point? Why, yeah.
I just saw some of the worst things. I saw people's heads getting blown off, like being burned alive in front of me, and now you're telling me I have to come back and be a perfect citizen?
Right.
For after I did something so horrible for you because you told me to do that, fuck you. You're not my government. And then they're like, nah, we are. You're going to learn to communicate. I'm going to throw you in there. God, that just, it's like, ugh, it gives me the heebie-jeebies thinking about being in that position.
Yeah, that'd be rough. I couldn't imagine it.
Yeah. And we'll continue to talk about this, but one thing that I didn't realize until probably on the way up here is it's eerie how similar of a situation our government seems to be in now, mm-hmm. compared to this, like government repeating itself.
Yeah.
Like our, like with everything that's going on in Portland right now and now happening in Chicago and sending in the troops when a lot of people are like, no, in the protesting, there's a lot of like, just
history repeats itself.
Yeah. And it really goes to show the young, like the older generations of the time right now are like saying like, just do the right thing.
Yeah.
The government tells you to do this. Why don't you just do this? And all the younger generations are like, but that's wrong.
Yeah.
Why, this government is taking power and abusing it. And so you have these clashes that are, it reminded me a lot of this. I'm like, wow, that's kind of eerie. Yeah. Anyways, though, I'm going to continue this, see if there's anything. Oh, yeah, because it leads into the next scene, and I did want to talk about that. So this, you cut right to the guys on the side of the road, basically.
Chain gang.
Chain gang. Yeah, that's the name for it. Just the chain gang. And even, what does the sign say when it's held up? Guy holding
it's
the...
like road closed or something. Yeah. Slow down, men at work.
Yep, and they're just working their day's way. And the gun, you got these guys looking over them, the authority with the gun.
Taking it off here, boy.
And I love this segment where they're doing all this stuff and they're like, doing this now, boss.
Yeah.
Doing this now, boss.
I'll let you know what I'm doing. Otherwise, you know, I don't want you to shoot me.
Yeah, it shows.
Wipe it up here, boss.
All right, Coco, wipe it off.
Drink it up here, boss. All right, drink it up, gambler.
So they're like, anytime they want to take their clothes off, they want to like wipe their brow.
Yeah.
They need a drink of water in this 100 and some degree weather. They're like, I need a drink here, boss. And he's like, get a drink.
Yeah. It, have you seen Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, but I don't remember a lot from it.
So there's a point where Morgan Freeman's character is finally let out of jail,
uh-huh.
and he's working at this grocery store as a bagger, and he's like, "Restroom break, boss." He's like, "Dude, you don't have to tell me." And then you know the voiceover comes in saying, "Truth be told, I don't think I could take a leak without somebody saying I can," because he's been in prison that long. So. You know, very similar.
Oh,
it's like,
man.
You've got to check in with everything.
So that, okay, you saying that reminded me of, like, you think about this. This entire prison system is meant to break them into reform.
Mm-hmm.
In that structure right there, like Morgan Freeman saying that, that is just like how, I'm not saying, I don't want it to come out that I'm not patriotic and I don't believe in the military or the forces, because I do think there's a strong value in that. But there is a very specific age range that the military recruits it's trainable.
Yeah.
they're the moldable society. After around the 30 mark, they don't look at you as like a viable candidate because you've already formed the idea of who you are in your head. So trying to mold that mind into mm-hmm. doing what you want them to do, like go out there and kill for your country. It's very tough after 30.
Yeah.
And so It's interesting because that's what this entire film is based around, is the same thing with the military. Like, you talk to anybody that goes through those basic trainings, they beat you down and then they build you back up into the character, like this person that can like think under pressure and
the way to survive.
Exactly. With a team and all that stuff. Like, you can't have a sense of like pain or anything like that. It's all about like, I am this person now and I can do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what this is. Like, you see him in this hot weather doing all this stuff while these people are, like, eventually beating the shit out of Paul Newman. And you're like, holy fuck, that's what they're doing, is they think if I can beat you down, you'll learn to conform to what I'm telling you to do, and then you'll do it.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. I didn't think about that.
Warm down.
It was this opening scene where it started, that feeling of like, oh, this looks miserable.
And you just see that long road ahead of you.
Yeah, totally.
It's just an infinite road. Just, that's all you're going to be doing.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. You look at it, you're just like, oh, man.
Just going to swing that thing for hours.
And this part right here.
You like balling there, society?
Checking my yo-yo, boss.
Like, look at that. He's looking at a car going by, and he's like, what are you eyeballing there? You looking at like a life of running? You want to try and take off? You think you can get past us? He's like, nope,
just checking my tool here. I'm going to get right back to work.
Yep, you got it, boss. I would never think about doing something like that. And I love these shots right here. So we have right close up to the camera. The camera's all the way down at the ground. You're just looking at these feet as they stand in front of all these workers looking at the long road. And it really sets the power dynamic of this authority looking down on these individuals as he's like monitoring. And right in between the legs, that's one thing I want to tell you, like, choosing this film, so perfect. This is one of a lot like Once Upon a Time in the West. I would say I enjoyed this one even more in terms of like symbolic placing of shots. Because, like, even between the legs here, you have the guy walking right at the camera with the gun to really show the sense of authority that's going on.
Yeah.
Right, new meat, boss.
New meat, boss. And now here comes the car.
Notice they call Dragline boss.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Because they were just talking to each other, right?
Yeah.
It's like, new meat here, boss. So you're learning that Dragline is kind of like the head of this
chamber. Yeah. I totally didn't pick up on that, but that he's one of the guys that's been in there for so long. He's acquired or like picked up all of
He's got the status. He's the one that if you need something or if something's going to happen, you go to him.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing goes on in there without him.
Whoa.
Without his say.
Dude, that's funny because by the end, he's basically worshiping Paul Newman.
Yeah. Yep.
Half a dozen, you mate.
And now they're betting on how many of these people, these new guys are coming in.
Again, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
You work the chain gang, you bet. Just gambling.
Yep. Yeah, like you... So
the man with no eyes.
The man with no eyes. Let's talk about him. Okay, so this is Boss Man Godfrey. Or Godfrey? Godfrey.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Anyways, this guy's this. He doesn't say a single word the entire time. I think he screams when he gets choked out by Dragline.
I was going to say, there's something that I think he had like a line in there.
Yeah, it was like right in the middle when Paul Newman like stood up to him. Oh, yeah. Well, when he's shooting the turtle, something like that. There's something that happens there.
He had a line or two, but nothing. I mean, it's all about his demeanor.
And
who
they
he
even
is.
Say you don't talk back to the guy that can't see,
right?
Or has
with no eyes.
That's what they say.
He's always wearing those sunglasses.
Oh, that's and look how perfectly. This is what I'm talking about. Shots like this. At times, it kind of catches me off guard because I'm like, oh, okay, this is abrupt.
Yeah,
and I was like, I understand there's stylistic placing here, but it kind of takes me out of the reality. But I do love this because this is also in a time where I don't think those are separate shots. I think this is actually a perfect reflection.
Because
I think shooting in the 60s, they didn't have the ability to overlay and cut that like that, right?
No.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. So they shot this so perfectly that on the right side of our camera right of the glasses, you see all the workers working in line. And on the left side of the reflection, you see the new guys coming in where Paul Newman is coming in. So he's watching both of them. And you're watching these two worlds merge, mm-hmm. which is really cool. And it's zooming in on this guy's eyes.
And it's the new meat that that's yes. coming right to him.
Yeah, it's the new meat.
These are the new people I'm going to be.
Yep.
Breaking.
I'm going to be breaking them. So after this scene, we can pop around again and start going. Because I don't want to spend forever just watching the film and breaking it down. I want us to be able to have the freedom to pop around. But like, this is so crazy. We've been podcasting for almost like 30 minutes now, breaking this down. Yeah. We are only 4 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
Four fucking minutes.
You can really do that with this one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things in each one that you can break
totally
down.
I mean, like, this right here is sort of my shit, is talking about like how stylistically things are shot to convey a meaning. Look at this shot right here where the car's parked and they're letting all them out. Look at the barrel of the gun that's crossed it. It's basically like these are purposely placed there to suggest you're entering a world that is dominated by my authority.
Mm-hmm.
And you're entering into this. This is my pain now, which is so cool. Cool boy, Paul Newman. Wow, he's so cool, man.
Just the look on his, like, he has no issues with where he is right now.
Not
dog boy, shut them dogs.
Which
not scared.
You fucking wouldn't be if you just came back from war.
Yeah.
This right
is
here,
nothing.
I'm on a chain gang in Florida. Come on, man. Whatever.
Yeah.
I just smell new meat, so boss.
Yeah, the dog's barking. So that is that was one of the parts I want to touch on right here, is like, this is the introduction to the dogs barking at him, and the dogs come in numerous times where they're chasing them down.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting though, as I was watching this through the second time, is that there's a eerily similar resemblance to the prison mates to dogs. Like,
oh,
they're,
yeah.
Like they're fucking being broken in.
Yeah. Like, they're just little animals. They're not human.
Yeah. They're just training them, and they break them until they're like, okay,
now you're going to obey.
Yep. And it's so funny because they have a shot in here when the prisoners are leaving, when Paul Newman gets there, the first day of coming back out into the, like, seeing what he has to do, there's a shot that's inserted with the dogs going nuts and just barking, just a kennel full of them. And so as they're sitting there barking, going nuts, then you look at these guys leaving, and the camera is really shaky.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire time the camera's really placed real still, and it's like authority, like dominating figure, this is the way life is. And then all of a sudden you get a POV of them, and the camera's handheld, and it's like going everywhere, and you're like, holy shit, these are like new dogs. They don't know what's happening. They're being brought out into the field for the first time, and they're going to fucking learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I just jumped ahead, but this is one of my favorite parts because you get to see the captain for the first time.
What they bring us today.
Come on, brother.
Gibson, 507, manslaughter. Good for two spots.
It was an accident. I've never been in trouble before.
Captain.
Edgar Potter, 302, and resisting arrest. 1 year.
I was trying to keep in all the rain.
Get the wax out of your ears. You call it Captain.
Yes, sir.
And you call the rest of us boss, yeah?
Yes, boss.
This man is going to make us proud of him, Mr. Hunker. Raymond Pratt.
I like how he suggests that. He's like, it's basically, it's a challenge. It's like, no, be easy on him. He's going to make us proud of him because he's going to listen up.
Yeah.
Aren't you now, boy? That's what I love about
the
captain.
You know what's good for you.
Exactly. You're going to listen. That's what I love about the captain, because the captain is the most is symbolically tied to government authority out of anybody in this entire film.
Mm-hmm.
He's in control. He has all the control, and he lets you know the entire time. All of his dialogue is based around saying, like, I'm not the bad guy. I'm the good guy. I'm just doing my job. And if you do what you're supposed to do, this will be a pleasant experience.
Yep, we're all going to get along just fine.
Yep, but if you don't, you're going to learn how to get along just fine. It's never he's the bad guy.
Right.
never. Even the failure to communicate line that comes up later, it's like, this isn't a bad situation. It's a failure for you to understand what's supposed to be understood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Captain.
Breaking, entering, and assault. Five spot. Ran a semen.
What's a, what do you think a five spot is? Because he says
years.
It's years.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. So,
yeah, 5 years.
So the one guy, manslaughter, he only got 2 years for two spot for manslaughter?
Apparently.
Man.
There's a point a little bit later in the film where it says something about, it kind of explains that, you know, you've only had a year left, or you only have like...
Okay.
I don't know. There was something I remember there that like correlated,
yeah,
you know, a two spot versus 2 years.
Hmm.
Expect that should come in real handy around here, Captain.
Maybe. Lucas Jackson.
Here, Captain.
Maliciously destroying municipal property while under the influence.
Did you notice how quickly he adapted, your Captain? You call him Captain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the military.
Yep.
That's what's beaten into him already. He knows how to respond.
It might even be so, like, coming back from war and it's beaten into him so much that he's like, this isn't even like, I just know what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I'm going to fucking tell you what you want to hear because I know it's the bullshit that you want.
Not him being, you know, giving him respect.
Yeah.
It's just like, I know this is what I got to say. I'm going to say it now.
So when he gets into the bunkhouse in a little bit here and he's introduced to all the guys, including Dragline and them, yeah. Dragline confronts him. And he's like, oh, we got someone here that doesn't know how to listen. You don't understand how this world works. You listen, and you're on the low end of the totem pole. And he's like, why aren't you listening? And Paul Newman's like, well, I ain't heard anything worth listening to since I've been here. It's just a bunch of rules and regulations. And that don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, see, that's how it is. Like, you're doing what they want to hear, but you don't believe in any of this.
No.
Yeah.
You just seen through all of it and knows what he wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember growing up in school, like in elementary, middle school, and you had like those kids in school that were always getting into trouble and you're like, fuck, dude, he is fucking brave. He's got some balls on him.
Or really dumb.
Yeah.
Like, why do you keep doing that?
Exactly. It transitions from like in the beginning, like, dude, that's not how things work here. You're going to get in trouble. And then it keeps happening. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, this guy's a bad kid. And part of you almost looks up to him like, fuck, he just like stood up to authority like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like Paul Newman's situation. He comes into this, he's like the new kid at school, and everybody's like, dude, you don't do that shit here. Like, you don't just take a shit in drawers. And then he's like,
I don't know what school you've been to, man, but
they don't do that at your school?
No, I don't remember that, no.
And Paul Newman's just go around shitting in drawers, and he's like, I do what I want. And everybody's like, after a while getting in trouble, people are like, fuck, man, Paul Newman's kind of a badass. Maybe we should all shit in drawers. And then the school system's like, no, don't do it. We got a failure to communicate. We don't shit in drawers.
What was that?
A little smirk.
Cutting heads off of parking meters.
Yeah,
he knows
smirk.
It's funny and stupid.
Yeah.
He's like, oh,
give a shit.
We ain't never had one of them before. Where do you think that's going to get you?
I guess you could say I wasn't thinking, Captain.
It says here that you did real good in the war. A Silver Star, Bronze Star, a couple of Purple Hearts, a Sergeant.
Now,
come out the same way you went.
Oh, that's so cool. Go ahead and say what you're going to say.
I was going to say this next part where it leads in, like, he built himself all the way up to a Sergeant.
Mm.
And then what was his rank when he left? And then his line after that just explains his character.
He's I didn't pick that up. Let me... Mm.
It says here that you did real good in the war. A Silver Star, Bronze Star, a couple of Purple Hearts, a Sergeant. And come out the same way you went in. But private.
Just like I was just passing time, Captain. And that's his mentality. Like, why are you cutting the heads off parking meters? Just passing time.
Pick that up. So he went in as a private. Got all these awards, was bumped up to a sergeant.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not what he wanted.
He didn't care. He wasn't in it for any of that stuff. He's just like, all right, I'm bored with this. I'll do this. All right, I'm down.
That's funny.
Back down to the rank of a private.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because that's what the government fucking is telling you during this time period. It's like, listen, we set up this perfect avenue for you to advance in life, but it has to be by our terms. Mm-hmm. And so he advances to a fucking sergeant, and they're like, congratulations. And he's like, I don't want that. You gave me that.
Yeah.
Why would I fucking want that? I didn't do this for you. And then he gets demoted back down. And so none of this means anything. Same with cutting, you're right, cutting the heads off the parking meters. Just passing time, Captain. God, it really just gives testament, like, how little dialogue's actually been said so far,
mm-hmm.
and how much we know. Like, that's the difference between, I can speak from like an acting standpoint and a writing standpoint. When people give me scripts to look at, and you're like on page 20, and you're like, who the fuck is this character? And what is going on? This, six pages into the film.
Yeah.
6 minutes into the film, 6 pages into the script, we know who this guy is, why he's here, what he's doing in this situation, what's the power dynamic of what's going on. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, and it's stuff that's not necessarily just spoon-fed to you.
Yeah.
You get it out of context of a lot of things, too, in the shots.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It's like, that's what it is. There's no, very little dialogue. It's those shots and the way they're conveyed. And then when the dialogue hits, it hits like mic drop.
You get
of,
it.
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
I got it. It reminds me of, this is a bit of a tangent, but like the writing that's so good right here. What is the Coen Brothers film with the writer, the script writer? He gets Barton Fink?
Is that it?
I can't remember. Oh, man, it's going to bug me. But there's, look that up. And then, so basically, I saw that with Josh a long time ago. He's like, you got to watch this. And I didn't realize, the movie's great, but it paints the picture of what Hollywood was doing at the time, where they were buying up, because they were making so much money on films, they were buying all of the great writers and putting them to work every day, where everything they wrote was for the studios.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just had the studios growing insanely at the time because they had all the great writers. And so they were pumping out script after script after script that you're like, holy shit, this is like the perfect story structure. It's like watching a Pixar film where you're like, whoa, that was one of the best stories I've ever seen because they have their algorithm figured out. And that's the same with that time period. And so you look at something that's so well written like this and you're like, wow, this is just from a time period when writers were like, good, like that's what they did.
There was another one that another movie like that with Bryan Cranston in it. It dealt with like thinking he was a communist and it, like, but he was a writer, like this very successful writer. And,
yeah.
Oh shoot, I can't think of it. I'll look that up too, I guess.
Yeah. I'm the wrong person to be like, what is this movie? Because that's the basis of this podcast. Yeah, right. Watching movies that I've not seen, which is kind of crazy in a sense. It's like, here we are breaking this down. I'm getting such a kick out of it. And then it's like, wow, there's a lot of movies I haven't seen that it's like, come on now. But yeah, like this, the film is just, it's written so well. And I would be really interested to download the script and go through line by line to see how it's written to what shots they use to convey what was written. Because so much of the dialogue of the story is being told through shots right now,
mm-hmm.
that it would be interesting to be like, it's like two stories being told into being linked into one, into telling one. Like, yeah. You have to be really good at conveying story visually and literally.
Yeah.
Littorally? Through literature? Whatever. Anyways, keep going.
Literarily?
Yeah, there we go.
Passing time, Gavin.
Well, you got yourself some time now, 2 years. Well, hell, that ain't much. We got a couple of men here doing 20 spots. We got one that's got all of them.
That was actually the point back there where it said that where it explained what the spots were.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, we got men in here doing a 20 spot. We got...
Yeah.
So that's where it explains...
Two spot, that ain't that long.
Yeah.
We got all kinds, and you're good to fit in real
all
good.
All kinds, and... You're gonna fit in real good. Of course, in case you get rabbit in your
rabbit
and you decide to take off for home, you get a bonus of some time and set of leg chains to keep you slowed down just a little bit. For your own good. You'll learn the rules. It's all up to you.
This right here, this line I wrote down, I bolded, I wanted to talk about. So I love this line, but we've already touched on this. It's all up to you.
I can be a good guy, or I can be one real mean son bitch.
That little snarling.
Yeah, that snicker. That's what caught me. I was like, oh, he knows what he's fucking doing. Luke,
he knows the kind of guy he's dealing with.
Yeah. He's like, I've heard this over and over and over again. And it's because the fucking captain is playing this manipulative game in his dialogue where he's like, this isn't about me. This is about you. You're going to learn that you can either play by the rules or not play by the rules. And then I'm not the bad guy. I'm just here to make sure you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, this guy is a fucking terrible person. He's so horrible. And he's doing this to these people. And but it's not him.
Yeah.
Just like the government at the time where it's like, no. We're sending you off to war. We're going to make you kill all these people. And even though you don't want to, you're going to do it for a cause that you don't believe in. But it's not me that's the bad guy. It's you don't understand the reason you have to do this.
Right.
That's fucked up, dude.
It's all up to you.
All right, let's move it.
Still got a little smile on his face.
Yeah.
One at a time. Move it.
Them clothes got the laundry number.
So, right here, I'll play
the numbers on them. You remember your number and always wear the ones that has your number. Any man forgets his number, spends the night in the box. These here spoons, you keep with you. Any man loses his spoon, spends the night in the box. There's no playing grab ass or fighting in the building. You got a grudge against another man, you fight him Saturday afternoon. Any man playing grab ass or fighting in the building spends the night in the box.
So he's basically just going through saying, you do this wrong, you're going to be punished. You do this wrong, you're in the box. You do this wrong, you're in the box, which is you sit outside in this box in the hot, sunny night and day.
And it's not even something you can, I mean, it's like, what, 3 feet wide? You know, like three feet by 3 feet. It's not like you can lay down in it and sleep in it.
It's pure torture.
Yeah.
On like some of the cruelest level. And so it's interesting where it's like you see Paul Newman right before this in the scene, and it's like pretty casual up until this point, like you got in trouble, you can do this, you can do this, and then this next scene abruptly goes into, these are the rules and regulations, your life is no longer yours, you're just like what you said, just like the military. Yeah. I didn't even connect that. This, they're all standing in line here, this guy's walking up and down telling them, you've just lost control of your life. Now you're mine, and you're going to be okay, obeying by these rules, or you will be punished.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Luke throughout this.
First bell is at 5 minutes of 8. When you will get in, like, the bunk. Last bell is at 8. Any man not in his bunk at 8 spends the night in the box. There's no smoking in the prone position in bed. To smoke, you must have both legs over the side of your bunk. Any man caught smoking in the prone position in bed spends the night in the box. You get 2 sheets every Saturday. You put the clean sheet in the top sheet in the bottom sheet you turn in the laundry boy. Any man turns in the wrong sheet spends the night in the box. Which no one will sit in the bunks with dirty pants on. Any man with dirty pants on sitting on the bunk spends the night in the box. Any man don't bring back his empty pop bottle spends the night in the box. Any man loud talking spends the night in the box. You got questions, you come to me. I'm Carr, the floor walker. I'm responsible for order in here. Any man don't keep order spends the night in the box. I hope you ain't gonna be a hard case.
Dude, they're not even.
He just pinpointed him. He knows Luke's gonna be a hard case.
Yep. Yeah, I hope you're not gonna be a hard case.
He's just giving. He's like, I see you.
Yep.
We're gonna be watching you.
Yeah, and Luke's like, okay, whatever, man. I've been through so much worse. Don't even pretend.
Yeah.
I like how the guard doesn't even look at him as human beings.
No.
He's just your case. Your case.
You're just a number. Whatever number is on your clothes, that's your number.
Yep, and you're here for the time, and it's my job to make you better, and if you're not, you're a case that
failed. Spend a night in the box.
Spend a night in the box, and you're going to learn. Yeah. So, I mean, there's some other scenes that we can pop to.
All of them.
Dude, for reals, though.
There's so much to it that, I mean...
Yeah, I mean,
there are so many scenes of them just working out on the chain gang, but there are little things happening each time too.
Mm-hmm. So that right there, I mean, I don't
heard nothing worth.
Yeah, I ain't heard nothing worth. That's what he was. That was that next scene coming up. So we're 9 minutes in, and we've talked for 50 minutes on that.
That's insane.
See, that's how just prolific this entire, if that's the word I'm looking for, is this entire film is built. It is an art. It is a complete work of art.
Yeah.
And it is so much. Like, I remember when I left here after watching it with you, I was just like, wow, I didn't understand all of that. It was so much. So next part we don't have to jump and watch it, but I wanted to talk about the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So after he talks back to
Lucille. Stop putting the thoughts in their minds.
Yeah, so there's a super attractive girl on the side of the road, and she is just antagonizing him because she knows she can.
That's exactly what she's doing.
Yeah, she's washing a car. She's covering herself in suds and water, and the guys are losing their mind. And Dragline already doesn't like Luke.
Yeah.
He knows. He's like, you don't understand who's the totem pole. It's like what you said he was out there.
Yeah.
He's the status symbol.
Yep. He's the boss.
He's the boss.
And he knows Luke is going to give him a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
He still has got to be the boss.
Yeah. The hierarchy in jail, and he's at the top. And he's like, Luke, you're new here, bro. You don't even get a name until I tell you.
You don't talk back to me.
You don't talk back to me. And so then after Dragline's going on about Lucille just antagonizing all the guys, like, she's so hot, man. You guys see her? Oh, I bet you it's just going on. Luke basically tells him, like, dude, shut up.
Yeah. Quit doing that. You're making everybody, I mean, horny. What can you do about it?
Dude,
it's a bunch of guys in a bunk now. Come
there's
on.
A scene. Did you notice they were taking turns getting up to go to the bathroom? Because they're all going to masturbate. They're all going to do their thing. I was like, oh, okay. So he basically is like, dude, I'm surrounded in a bunk of dudes. Bunks of dudes. Yeah. Stop it.
There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. And Dragline's like, you don't fucking tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know what? Just like we heard a minute ago, you got a grudge with a dude, you fight him on Saturday.
Do it on Saturday.
And so that's what I wanted to talk about was this fight. It's real interesting because you look at like power dynamics between like the authority and the prisoners. And one way to keep people in check, which you kind of can see in this nation going on right now, is you don't look at the enemy. The enemy is not the authority. You split the division amongst each other.
Yeah.
So you look at the political stuff that's going on right now, and our government is telling us it's a division between right and left. You have the people on the right, and you have the people on the left. Both think the other person's crazy, but it's not the fucking government that got us into this position. Yeah. We're here to help you. Yeah. Look how much... Okay, I don't want to make this a political podcast, but look how much they fucked things up during this pandemic. Like, royally, on both sides, the government has just fucked things.
There are a lot of other countries that have handled it
way better. So you look at similar to this right here, where the older generations are like, the government's here to protect us, you gotta have faith in them. And then the younger generation's like, no, the government is like totally fucked this up, and they're relying on themselves in this standpoint. Now I'm getting off tangent, but anyways, so one of the easy ways to keep people in check is to make the division amongst each other. So you set aside
let them
this
have
time.
Their ranks.
Exactly.
But also, you know that you can't have a group of guys bunked up and held together without there being some sort of tension.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? We got to let them have a moment where they can release that tension.
Totally.
Otherwise, it's going to get chaotic.
And it's going to be taken out on us.
Yeah, and it's all going to come at us. So let them
let them
get their grudges out and just be done with it for a while.
Yeah. You are doing them a favor by being like, I'll let you guys fight.
Yeah.
You guys are going to fight each other, though, because then it doesn't turn on us.
And it's a controlled environment for them then.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, here's some boxing gloves. We're going to watch you, because if you do something stupid, we're going to take it into our own hands. But,
yeah,
you know, let them burn off some energy.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's the head of the totem pole versus low status Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And low status Luke is like, okay, I'll fight you.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm not worried. This guy's like,
but he knows,
Luke
knows he doesn't have a chance against Dragline.
Not a clue.
Dragline's
not a chance.
A giant.
He's fucking huge.
And Luke, I mean, yeah, he's a military guy, so you know, you could always argue things like that. But in this movie, he's like, he knows that he doesn't have a chance.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm going to let you go on for a minute.
Oh, I was just looking at the next point, because it's like, that leads into the next point. He knows he doesn't have a chance, but he's like, this is exactly 30 minutes into the movie, so this is the first time Luke really shows his character.
Yeah.
Shows what he's about. The entire time, he gives zero fucks.
Yeah.
He's just like, I don't have a thing to care about. I'm just doing what I do. Now you see, because he gets in this fight, and the big part about this is everybody's looking for a fight to watch, and they're watching him get the shit kicked out of him, and they're watching, waiting for someone to lose, and he won't give up.
Where the dynamic changes of who Luke is. It's everybody just knows Luke as another guy that, yeah, he might be a little cocky. He might, you know, just kind of be his own guy. But the point where he keeps getting back up, and you see that turn of the guys that are watching, they're like, dude, just stay down. Don't get up. Don't get up. And he keeps doing it. And it even gets to the point where Dragline's just like, don't get back up.
Yeah.
And he still does it.
Even the guy fighting him's like, stay down.
And even when he gets up, he just, he's totally spent. He throws one little hook or whatever it is, where there's nothing behind it. There's no chance, but he's still going.
What did Dragline say? He said, he's like, dude, you're done. Give up. Yeah. And then you see this little and it hits him in the face, and then he just clocks him. And then he still gets up.
But that's how, I mean, that's where the dynamic changes. People start respecting him more. Mm-hmm. Even Dragline. That's the moment where Dragline's kind of like, all right, this guy's got something going on. Like, he's not just an idiot that's running around trying to pick fights.
Yeah. So this is the dialogue when he gets knocked down to the ground. After getting the shit kicked out of him the first time during that fight, three guys go to help him, and they say, just stay down, Luke. He's going to knock you down again. It's not your fault. He's too big. Let him hit you in the nose. Get some gut blood flowing. Maybe the bosses will stop it before he kills you. That line right there symbolizes the entire dynamic between the prisoners and the guards. Prisoners and the guards. It's like, just stay down, Luke. He's going to knock you down again. That's all they keep doing to him. Mm-hmm. If you revolt, or if you, like, rebel and try to run away, they knock you down and put you even further down. And then they're like, it's not your fault. He's too big. The government, the establishment, the authority, they're too big. It's not your fault. Like, just stay in line. And it's exactly what's been pounded into them. That's the message of it. And then they're like, maybe just let him hit you in the nose, okay? Then they will feel bad. Like, that's how low you are below this person. And Luke looks at him, and I can't remember what he said, but he goes, I wouldn't want to scare him, though, or something like that. Like, it's so great.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, he just keeps getting back up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just about the fight. It's just him in society. He keeps getting back up. No matter what's going on, he's just going to keep getting back up. He's not going to let them.
Why do you think, like, is it for him? Is it for his sake? Or is it because, like, just the rebellious attitude? It's like, I have no problem losing, but it's not going to be because you told me I had to. Like, I don't know. It's like,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, I don't think that it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, it's, I don't know. It's a very interesting, I think it'll come out later, like, watching it. But it, like, right now, like, I was thinking about it. I don't know. The next time after he gets up, though, he gets right back up, throws a punch. It's like so weak.
Yeah.
It just hits him in the face. And then Dragline knocks him out again. The very next shot, he gets up. He is looking. I'll see if I can. Wow, he's actually pretty good shape after that fight, betting cards. So. So he gets knocked out right here. I love this shot. This is the type of shots we were talking about earlier. So when he falls down, I don't know if I can pin it.
Also watch, you know, you've got the warden that starts paying attention to, okay, this Luke guy is not just going to give up.
Yeah, he's stubborn. And
he's
that's
a man I'm going to have to watch.
Yeah, this shot right here. So he falls down, and look how perfectly placed this is. He's in between two legs of a shackled man as the chains are draped across his face. Mm-hmm. In the high status guy, Dragline, who is kind of like the king of the prisoners right now, is looking down at him, and you see Luke, and look at the face he makes. Okay. He looks at the shackles and he's like,
just gotta do it again.
Here we go again. Yeah. I'm not gonna give up. It's not in his nature.
Right.
So then you get to the end. He gets the shit kicked out of him. And I love it because he fights so much to the end and won't give up that eventually everybody just leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Even Dragline.
They don't want to see that
Yeah.
They don't want to see him get beat anymore.
Yeah. They're like, I don't want this. I'm interested. I don't remember this. At the very end, when everybody leaves, I want to see what the captain's face, what he looks like, if he takes note of, like... Okay. That... So the captain was like, whatever, it's another guy. But all these boss men kind of look at it like, this guy is like exactly what you said. Like, this guy doesn't give up. Yeah. Which isn't good for us, because that's where our power lies, is when you give up because we beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Like, even, I don't remember this guy's name. He's the boss man that talks quite a bit. Yeah, look at everybody's fucking leaving.
He's just looking at everyone.
Yeah.
Like, and I am still here. I'm still standing. And I got the crap beat out of me, but I'm just...
That's right. Here we go.
Yeah, it's like that. You're right. Earlier you said this is the shift. This is the shift in the movie of the power dynamic, and it's because they're not leaving. They're not leaving because the fight's over. They're leaving. I think it's honestly because they don't know how to feel. Mm-hmm. This is like when you start to really adapt a new part of your personality that really shakes the perspective of how you viewed yourself in the world. All of a sudden, like, you start to be like, okay, what is going on? A lot of these guys have such a structure built around them of how they live their lives. This type of stuff doesn't happen.
Right.
They just saw for the first time somebody stand up and nothing happen.
Standing up to authority.
Standing up to a fucking authority.
Yeah. You look at like Luke's face as he's looking around at everybody. It's almost like saying, yeah, look, you can still do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to be beaten down all the time.
No. No, I don't even think he's saying, like, I'm a prime example.
No.
It's just, that's what's coming off.
Yeah.
You attract to the naughties, man. It's like the kids in school where you're like, holy shit, that kid just, like, swore at that teacher. You could totally do that. He is in trouble, but his life's not over.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
Yeah, he's still going to be here the next day.
Yeah. I wrote this down. It's interesting. You never see another fight after this.
Nope.
Not a single one, because they've lost interest in this idea of, like, oh, there's no fun in it if you can't beat the other guy. Like, it unites the inmates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of camaraderie in that afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I said it's the difference between earlier, you see the dynamic, the hierarchy of, like, this person is this in charge of this person and in charge of this person in terms of the inmates. Now it suddenly becomes inmates and then guards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess you kind of had that dynamic in the beginning. It's like, you're here and I'm here. But now the inmates are, like, getting along a lot better. And it's
right.
Like,
yeah,
like, they help him escape. Who fucking does that? Yeah. His mom dies and they create a distraction for him to get out later in the movie. And they're like, yeah, we're in on
Except
it.
Except there's the one guy that, like, freaks and runs on his own.
Yeah. Is that?
Which, like, so you asked about that.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I think.
I asked if it was on purpose, right?
I don't think it was on purpose. I think he saw an opportunity. It was like, I'm going to get out of here too. And he took off. And that's what caught the attention of the guards, which kind of screwed over Luke.
Because
It could have been, he could have had hours.
Yeah,
you know, on the road without anyone knowing, because it was bedtime.
Totally.
But this one guy running suddenly is like, "Oh, we gotta let's recount. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that we've got everybody." And it's like, "Okay, we're still missing one. We gotta get moving."
So, we're about an hour in the podcast. Let me know if you have to take off to go to the bathroom or anything, because I can pause. This is very loose structure.
There might be a lot of editing in this one.
Oh, I don't edit hardly anything. I'll be honest with
then
you.
Then nobody's going to listen beyond this point. Yeah.
There's like a couple.
Okay, it's an hour.
I know, right? Most of my podcasts go, the one with Josh went almost 2 hours. Most of them
I think it went
hour.
Over 2 hours.
Yeah. That was a pretty long one.
Yeah.
So if someone comes or whatever, we'll just pause it, or if you have to go. But what was I going to say? Oh, I can't remember. We'll continue going down
Moving
the notes.
On.
Let's talk about the captain when he goes after Luke tries running. So basically, in the middle of the film, Luke's mom's comes in, and you finally find out a little bit besides the war about Luke's backstory. Mm-hmm. He's got a mom and a brother, and his dad isn't in the picture. Mm-hmm. And has never been.
And his mom seemed to favor Luke.
Yes, she even
said that. She talks about that and says, you know, I'm leaving, what is it, John?
Something like that.
Because here's the thing. Did you also catch all the biblical references in the movie?
No.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Really?
Yeah. If you start looking at it, if you look for it, there's a lot of that.
Oh, I mean, that's interesting.
Luke is portrayed as kind of the Jesus Christ of the film. Like, he's the one that's the martyr. He's given himself for all of these things.
Yeah.
Like when he eats the 50 eggs. Look at him at the very end.
Oh.
Do you know how he is at the very end?
No.
He's laid on the table with his arms straight out and his feet down as if he's on the cross.
Oh, it's, what?
He sacrificed himself to eat 50 eggs just... what, for entertainment?
Wow. You know? Yeah.
But there are a million of them. I mean, if you start looking things up, you'll find so many references to different things.
Yeah.
But that's another one where it's like, I think his brother's name was like John or something. So another one of the books of the Bible.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to this.
Oh, no. I like that. Let's talk about that, because now I'm thinking it through and it makes so much sense. Like, if he is this resemblance of in this world of Jesus, you look how he comes in and everybody denounces him. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, everybody starts to attract to him. He becomes high man on the totem pole. He has all his disciples. Number one being Dragline. Mm-hmm. He was the number one before, but now he's like, you're my man.
You're my man, Luke.
I'll follow you to the end. Even when they escape at the end, he's like, I'll follow you anywhere.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, okay.
Except he does, at the very end,
yeah.
Dragline's caught and he sells him out.
He
comes back. He's like, Luke, you just come with us, man.
The good guys.
It's that whole, you know, the disciples selling him out. It's, you know.
Totally.
Come back.
Oh, dude. 100%. And it's even like, that even happens again when Luke comes back. I mean, this isn't so much, I don't think, a biblical reference in terms of that, but when Luke goes, I made it all up, you guys. Okay, it was all made up. And then you see Luke break. And then everybody loses faith. Most though, I think Dragline's like, he just is sick of him. Mm-hmm. He's like, fuck this dude. He broke. Everything we believed in him is a lie. We bought into it.
Yep.
All this stuff. And you see everybody give up on him and all his disciples leave. And then when he splits and run again.
Dragline's running after him.
Yeah, jumps in the car.
I'm on board with you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, you had this plan the whole time.
Yeah.
And Luke is like, no, they broke me. They actually broke me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, I didn't have this plan. I didn't know what was going on, but suddenly I felt like I had to run again.
That just goes to show, it's like everybody's like worshiping him and he's like, dude, this isn't about you guys. This has never been about you guys. I don't plan a thing in my life.
Yeah.
I've never planned a single thing in my life. I'm just doing what I'm doing.
What I want to do.
Yeah. That's what I was, now just perfect. We come back in a circle. When I was talking about the being an hour in part. So in the middle of the film, we have the mom come. Mm-hmm. We have the mom come and we have her talk about the brother dynamic. And then we also have her talk about the father dynamic. And he's like, he's never been around, but I loved your father. And then you find out she's dying from cancer, mm-hmm. Which I'm assuming is cancer.
I assume so. Yeah. I mean, and, heavy smoker.
Yeah. She's like, you are my favorite. I know you don't play favorites. I'm leaving everything to him. Just because I feel guilty as a mother playing that favorite. And he's like, sounds good.
Yeah.
I don't need it anyways. My life is whatever. And one thing I found, Luke does not take authority from anybody in this entire film except for you see him become a human being in front of his mom,
mm-hmm.
when he's talking to her, and then one other time, and it's when he's in the church either praying to God or his dad, which now when you talk about the biblical references makes so much sense how the
one
two
the same.
Yeah, they're the one and the same. He's like, God, you are my father, okay?
Yeah.
I've done my stuff my entire life, but if you're really up there and you're looking out for me, just like Jesus to God,
right.
God's son, he's like, tell me what's next. I will be a disciple to you. Just tell me what's next.
Just tell me what to do.
Tell me what to do. Holy shit, dude. Whoa, that is crazy. And then his answer, when Dragline comes back in at the end, he goes, really? This is it. Yeah. He knows he's not supposed to get out.
Yeah. He knows he's not going to go.
Yeah.
All those things that Dragline said that they're going to, you won't even get in trouble. You won't even, it's going to be just like it was before. It's like, no, I know where this goes.
Yeah.
And it can't go that way for me.
Yeah. Dude, that is so similar to like he realizes my spot is here and it's as a martyr for these individuals. Mm-hmm. And so hence the reason he goes to the window. He knows his life's over, mm-hmm. but he knows that they're going to worship him afterwards.
Yeah.
And his legacy, that worship isn't that this guy is amazing, he's a legend. It's not just that. It's he stood up to authority.
Yeah.
He was us versus them, which is pretty fucking cool. I didn't even... That connects so...
And I also love his Luke's line. He throws that failure to communicate line right back at him.
Yup. Yeah, he opens
like,
the window.
You know, you guys have this authority over us, but we do have this failure to communicate, but it's not on us.
Yeah.
It's on you guys. You're not listening to us too.
Talk about for like counterculture movement at the time.
Yeah.
Like we do have a failure to communicate. We've had it this entire time. The problem is
but you're looking at it the wrong way.
Ass backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. There's something else. If you have anything else to add, go ahead and add it
going.
I'm looking through this. Yeah, that reminds me of like, so that end scene when he goes, we have a failure to communicate. He mocks him too.
Mm-hmm.
He mocks him in doing that when the window's open and before anything else even happens, right there, before anything else even happens, who's the boss man, Godfrey?
Mm-hmm.
Interrupts him and shoots him in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically... His disciple, Dragline, carries him out, brings him out, and they load him up in the car. And you see Dragline strangle. That's the first time anybody stood up
mm-hmm.
and like fought the
actually
guards.
Actually attacked the guards.
Because he saw Luke stand up even till his dying moment is like rebelling against authority.
Mm-hmm.
And rebelling against the oppressors. And so that's when you finally see the dynamic shift of like, oh, we can do that.
Yeah.
You just killed my best friend.
Do you notice the symbolism also when like they drove over the glasses?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. In the beginning when he's coming in, we talked about that earlier in the podcast, and those same glasses are smashed, and it's like, here was the authority. He's monitoring the men and monitoring those coming in. At the end, I'm going to pull that up. I wonder if there's a reflection in those glasses. Like
everywhere else. As soon as you see those glasses, you see what,
yeah.
what Godfrey is seeing.
Yeah, it's like, funny his name is Godfrey.
I got drunk and chewed up municipal property.
Okay. Too far.
There we go.
So he just attacked him.
You hang on in there, Luke. You hang on. There's gonna be some world shaking, Luke. We gonna send you a postcard.
You follow me and I'll radio the emergency clinic to open up.
I'm taking him to the prison hospital.
I saw the
That's
red.
Way. Ain't gonna make it.
Get out of the way.
Yeah.
Little smile.
I love that dialogue. He's like, we'll bring him to the emergency medic. And he's like, no, he's going to the prison hospital. He's ours. And then Luke turns over and smiles because he's like, I'm not yours. I've never been yours.
Yeah.
I've been in control this entire
nobody's.
Time. And the fact that he turns over and smiles at Dragline right here is so key because Dragline sees his life was just taken from him. The biggest thing, think about that. The biggest thing that they have that's scary to these prisoners is like, we will beat you down or we will kill you. You will lose your life to us because you didn't conform. And then here's Luke. He just lost his life to them. And he's like, they still didn't get me.
I didn't conform.
I didn't conform. This isn't that bad. He's like, I'm going to die, yeah, but I stood up for what was right for me. And so, like, he smiles, and that just, like, that smile right there takes away all authority.
Here it is.
Yep, so those glasses shatter. Right after he turns and smiles,
yep.
The
that authority's gone.
The establishment's been broken. These glasses, which we're monitoring and policing, are now broken. And I love the tread mark over top of them. Yeah. I love that it's raining. It's just showing, like... And do you remember when he drove in the car in the beginning and you see that shot of the car driving in and down the road towards the prison?
Mm-hmm.
Here you have him driving away back to the prison, but this time he's dead.
Yeah.
He's returning as a martyr.
And now you get all of his disciples talking about him, remembering who he was.
Yep. Yeah. You have Dragline coming back, which is similar to Christianity.
And they're at the church that he got shot at.
No shit. Oh, I didn't even pick that up.
Yeah.
They took him right down that road.
He's talking, see?
What
do
he look like, Drag?
Yeah, Drag, what do he look like?
This is the different thing, because they're all huddled around talking.
Yeah.
Whereas every other time in the movie, when they're outside,
mm-hmm.
they're working. And they are just...
Yeah, boss man.
Away. Yeah. And here, they're all kind of huddled around chatting.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have to, you know, say, taking a smoke here, boss.
Nope, there's more of us and less of you, and we know the dynamic now.
Yeah.
It's not saying, like, we're going to rebel, but we know we're human beings.
Yeah.
It is, so, it's so funny that that's a church overlooking that. This, because so much of this, now that you've brought this up, so much of this is littered with, like, religious symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea, like... He just sacrificed himself as a martyr, and now he's changed this. And now Dragline, who is the witness to what happened, just like in Christianity, when they see that the tomb is empty,
mm-hmm.
And then they go forth and they spread the word of Christianity throughout the world.
Yeah.
This is the legend of Cool Hand Luke, and how he stood up for what was right in disputing authority that was unchecked.
Yeah.
There was, okay, that's what I wanted to, I think we're pretty much coming closer to the end here, but that was one thing earlier that I wanted to bring up, is that by Luke doing all of this, he basically is like, why don't we go ahead and pause this?
All right.
We got someone here right now, and then I'll look at that note, and then I'll be able to bring it back up.
Pick it up for 6 hours later.
Yeah, right. We are back online. We're back. Josh always has this intro music. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It is it's this one.
Good one.
Anyways, yeah. But that's not where we're at. So we're back. Eric Campbell just stopped in. He's actually still here. He's watching. What's up, dude? but we're going to close this sucker out for a little bit here, probably about 20 more minutes in the podcast. We're just talking about the religious symbolism in terms of these guys that are sitting below the church after they just watched Luke die, and how much it actually reflects on Christianity as a whole, as these are the disciples going through the prison system and basically standing up to authority and saying, giving them the giant middle finger.
Yeah.
I kind of want to play this for a second. I want to see what the guard does.
That's right. You know that
they're flashing back to like cuts
all
from
of his little smiles and smirks.
Yeah, got it on his face right to the very end. Hell, if they didn't know it for, they could tell right then that they weren't ever going to beat him.
It's so funny. So much against Luke. Him the entire film. This entire film is against him and oppressing him, and they're just showing montages of him smiling.
Yeah,
it's like, and there's the egg scene that you talk about. He turns and smiles.
Old Luke.
Luke boy.
He was some boy. Cool Hand Luke L. He's a natural born world shaker.
And then you see the shackles. Look at you see right at the very end, you see Dragline going about his job, whistling, enjoying it, and he's shackled now because he ran away.
Yeah.
And it's not even phasing him.
But he's whistling.
Yeah.
Like they never did. Like he never did that before.
No,
he was in the grind before. Now he sees the hope.
Yeah, he sees the hope of like, whatever they do, it can't break me. Which that was the note I was looking for on here. It raises the question yet again, how do you beat an opponent that refuses to give up? Like, this entire system is built to make you give up so that we build you into what we want you to be. And Luke didn't do that, and now he's showing all these other people they can't break you. They got no power over you. Yeah, maybe like a physical power, but mentally, emotionally, like, you can fucking take them
yourself.
On. Yeah, and just it just ends showing how fragile the establishment of authority really is, and how fragile its power is when it's challenged by like this rebellious nature of the human spirit. Like, it is so fragile. It's built upon a foundation that just it's based upon a foundation that is basically subjecting, like, you're right, I will not question what you say. I'll blindly follow the leader.
Yep. And as soon as somebody, you know, opposes that,
yeah,
you better strike them down quick.
Yeah. Because
if they don't, then you get something. You get what we have here last week.
I don't want to jump down a conspiracy train because I know we're coming to an end here, but it kind of reminds me of like the conspiracies of why was JFK assassinated. And like, correct me if I'm wrong, you might not know this either, but I'm pretty sure there's a huge conspiracy theory out there that JFK was actually assassinated because he wanted to end the Federal Reserve. Because it's a privatized company that handles the money for the government, and it's kind of like a shady business in itself.
I do not know anything about that.
Yeah,
I feel
so,
like I've heard something like that, but I've heard a million different conspiracies about that
also,
kind of stuff. So,
when last time before that, the person who wanted to end the Federal Reserve, I think when the Titanic sunk, a lot of the individuals, they were talking about ending it then too, and the Titanic sunk, and a lot of the people that were in power to be able to make that a thing were on board, and they're like,
the government put the iceberg in front of it.
Yeah, dude. Fucking weird conspiracies. Like, I also heard like Abraham Lincoln, something with that. Like, the conspiracy theories run deep, man.
Fun to talk to those people, man.
It's
a blast.
Tyler Lang and I were talking about that. It's just like, it's a different world.
Yeah.
And the internet allows it because you can go and you can see all that stuff.
You can
stuff
find
unchecked.
Like-minded people.
You find like, and you don't, in normal world before the internet, you were not challenged, or you were challenged, and people would be like, you're dumb shit.
Yeah.
That's not the way things work. Look it. Flat. The earth isn't flat because of this. And you're like, oh yeah, okay. But you don't have to listen to those people anymore.
Yeah, you go find, and there are multiple people that think the same way.
Yeah.
And some of them really know how to spin it so that if you have a little inkling of, like, I wonder, it's like, oh yeah, yep, you're definitely right.
Yep. Yep. And then you're like, okay, and you're right, and I'm gonna be right there with you, and I'm right, and I don't care what anybody else says. Yeah. I love this. We started talking about this movie in the beginning, and then we diverged and went and talked about like politics and how it connects to normal society. Then we touched on religion and Christianity, and now we're talking about conspiracies and the assassination of JFK in the Titanic. This podcast has come full circle to Cool Hand Luke and explaining it. Hands down. Like, this is like a squirrel who has ADD trying to explain a film. Like, that's me being like, let's break down this film. Titanic! The assassination of JFK, the Federal Reserve, Christianity, God, Luke, Cool Hand Luke. Yeah.
You are the squirrel.
Cool. Well, I think, unless there's anything else you want to add on this.
I mean, we could talk forever on things like that. There's so many things like where he, when we took the break, I mentioned like they're laying the tar on the road.
Yeah. Oh,
it's like he himself just starts going faster.
I forgot
and
about
then
that.
Everybody else starts picking up, and then they make it a game.
Yeah.
And they're running, and they're just constantly going. They finish like 2 hours early. They're like, well, what do we do?
Which is hilarious.
And even the bosses are like, I guess we just got
to
wait.
Yeah, that was a move by the bosses to be like, we're going to show you who's in charge again. You got a rough day ahead of you. And then Luke looks, and he's like, I'm going to make a fucking game out of this then. And all
fun.
Of them
we're
join
not
in.
We're not going to sit there and complain or feel like we're beaten.
Yeah.
It's like, no, let's have fun with it. They're all laughing.
After
having
that,
a great time.
That was when Dragline, I think, sided with him. And he was like, my man, Luke. Yeah. It was from that moment on. He's like, I've seen the light, and it's Luke's Cool Hands.
It's like, we didn't know what he was doing. We thought he was crazy. But now I see in the end, we have 2 free hours.
Yeah.
We've never had that before.
Yeah, we've never had 2 hours.
Yeah, what do we do?
Own time?
What do we do with ourselves?
They don't know what to do. We don't know what to do. We're free men.
Yeah.
For 2 hours, they were free men.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Again, you look at
like Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
When they're tarring the roof and yep. Andy gets the guys like talking about doing the foreman's taxes and stuff. And they did this whole thing where I don't remember how it all went, but they ended up getting like a 6-pack of beer on the roof.
Yeah.
And so they had a moment where they were free men.
And that's the most dangerous thing. You give them a taste of freedom. I mean, you talk to the captain this, I bet you he's like, that's the last thing you do. Yeah. The last thing you do is make them think that they have even the shadow of doubt of like, I'm a free person.
Yeah.
You don't do that, because as soon as you do that, that's what happens. You get an entire system that's like, wait, we had a taste of it. We could get more. They don't control me. They can't break me. And if they do break me, if they do kill me, I'm still going to be smiling at the end.
Yep.
I'm going to turn my head and I wish he would have given the bird. that would have been so good. All right. Well, I think that's all for the podcast. Do you have anything you want to plug? Social media or anything like that?
I'm horrible with social media, so no.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look up anything that I've posted, it's probably been at least 6 months to a year ago that I posted something. I'm terrible with it.
Cool. Well,
every set I'm on, I'm like, I got to take pictures and post it, and I never do.
I'll promote for you.
Okay.
Eric and I actually, we have a couple things coming out here, a couple of sketches written that I just pitched off him the other day. He doesn't really have much choice in it. He's going to end up doing them. So you'll see stuff coming out in at least my Instagram or TikTok channel.
You may not want to see it.
Yeah, you may not want to see it. We'll just say that we're both wearing very, very short shorts that are bedazzled and in some cowboy boots. and we're grilling out dogs like true men.
That's right.
That's going to be coming out. He also is the owner, as I mentioned in the intro, of Red Door Stage and Acute Focus. Does a whole bunch of live streaming, so if you need any live streaming, get a hold of him. I'll put all of his information in the show notes as well. As for the podcast, I could tell you what's coming up in the next one, but I don't have the vaguest idea. I think Nick Holland's going to be on the podcast. He's a guy I shoot with in Michigan and did a bunch of films with in the past and kind of got introed into this world. So I'm going to be talking to him. But at the same time, I was pretty sure that this next podcast was actually going to be talking about the Three Amigos. So with Josh. And just never ended up doing that and got to this one first. It'll come up in the future, but there's no structure to this, so we'll see what ends up happening. Eric will be on many times in the future. As he said, he's already got a list of films, so we'll get through that. Other than that, though, we hit an hour and a half. Nice job, dude.
That's nice, and not one time did you bring up the Human Centipede.
No! No! I've done it every podcast! Man, you know what? This podcast is absolute shit. Just like when the Human Centipede passes the shit from body to body to body. You know, okay, everybody always suggests movies that I have to watch because I haven't seen them. One of these times, I'm going to get someone who hasn't seen that film, and we're going to watch it, and we're going to break that film down.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because this podcast isn't just about good films. It can also be about bad films, disturbing films. And I heard when he did, I think there's three Human Centipedes. I've only seen the first.
Oh.
But I heard when he did the second or the third one, it was one of the two, he said his motivation was to make the most disturbing film the human has ever seen.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool. Man, people are going to think I'm disgusting. Anyways, that is Cinematically Deprived. I will see you next time.